right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, now switching over to the energy sectors, we're chatting with our good friend Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. We will go through some of the factors behind, I guess, the weaker oil price, natural gas, that's been a bit stronger. It sounds like Dan is leaning a bit more in the bullish camp for natural gas over oil, and a couple companies, as Dan usually does, send us that we will review that he covers within the Energy Prospectus Group. If you want to learn more about the Energy Prospectus Group, click that link in the show notes to follow along with what Dan and his members are discussing. Dan, let's start off with oil because, look, oil's been, I guess, arguably in a bit of a downtrend here. Broke below $70 a barrel a while ago, went the whole way down to about $65 and then rebounded. Looked like it was on an upswing, got the whole way to about $72.50 a barrel, and now has pulled back to about $67. Yes, oil is still broadly trading in a range, but it's in this lower part of the range. It has been weaker over the last couple months. Dan, what's causing this weakness in the oil price?
Well, you know, we were down in the 60s, and then we looked like we were crawling back out of 70, 72, 73, looked like the thing. Then we had a really good storage report on Thursday where, you know, the crude oil inventories went down like over 4 million barrels, and we were expecting something like 1 million barrel increase or decrease. But once you get into the tropical storm and you get these hurricanes running through the Gulf, it really messes up a lot of stuff. Not only does it shut in production, it also messes with imports and exports because the big tankers cannot, you know, when you got a storm like you got that's hitting Florida this weekend, you're talking 50, 60 foot waves, and they can, you know, they can really cause a problem for a tanker trying to get through that. So they go avoid the entire area. And so what happened was we had less exports, and some of the analysts took that, you know, for the last few weeks, our U.S. exports of light crude, which our refiners can't handle, that ultra light crude coming from the shale plays, there seemed to be less demand in it in the international market, like the European market or something. But when you get through these periods where you've got several weeks messed up by tropical storms, it does mess up the storage report. So I don't know. But then on Thursday, there's this article from Financial Times went viral that Saudi Arabia was going to abandon their production cuts and they were just going to flood the market with crude oil and, you know, drive down the price. They didn't care, regain market share, whatever. And there's, you know, conspiracy theories that there's some kind of side deal going with them. But I don't know why they would want to do anything to try to get Harris elected. I mean, the Biden administration is what's caused so much of the conflict in the Middle East anyway. But anyway, there's all these theories, but, you know, we'll have to live through it. We'll see. But I do think the fundamentals for oil are, you know, pretty good. I mean, our inventories in the U.S. for crude oil and refined products are below normal for this time of year. And then on the natural gas side, it's really looking bullish to me.
Well, Dan, it's interesting because when you look at oil, yeah, the fundamentals are still there. Although I think people came into this year projecting more demand than we actually have seen. We've still seen demand grow, but not at the pace. It's been about a third of the pace that people expected. But with nat gas, it was the reverse. People came in very pessimistic. I asked you off mic, and I'd like to ask you again here, just I think people came in with the recency bias of two very mild winters and that nat gas, that there was plenty of it. We got plenty of nat gas, but now we're seeing a lot of that nat gas reserves get chewed up right in time for a winter that may not be so mild. So how are you looking at the nat gas markets?
Yeah, and I think people, yeah, they get, oh, this global warming. See, we're going to have these mild winters from here on out. When you really look at the winter in the Northern Hemisphere for the last 2 years, it wasn't that the overall winter was that warm. It's just where it was warm. Like the last 2 years, west of the, you know, the western third of the country, west of the Rockies, we had really cold, lots of snow and just cold wave after cold wave. In fact, the natural gas price got up to like $10 on the California market for a while. But east of the Rockies, which is where most of the people live and most of the people heat their homes and businesses with natural gas, we did have mild winters. And what happened at the end of last winter, when we got to April of this year, actually, which the end of the winter heating season, we had 695 billion cubic feet of gas above the five-year average in storage. And everybody looked, oh, how are we going to work that off? Well, since April 19th, We've had 22 weekly storage reports, and we've knocked over 400, maybe almost close to 500 BCF of that surplus out of the surplus. So now the surplus is just over 200 BCF, but we're reducing the surplus by 30, 40, 50 BCF every week. And at the pace we're on, the storage will almost be back to normal by the end of November, and it's going to go into a deficit because we have two more big LNG export facilities coming online. And if we just have a normal winter, we could end up going from a 695 BCF surplus at the end of last winter to a 400, 500, 600 BCF deficit at the end of this coming winter. And if that happens, we're talking about bidding wars for physical supply between the LNG exporters and the utilities among themselves and the LNG exporters for supply. And that's what caused U.S. natural gas prices to spike to $9 in 2022. And I'm just saying, if we have a normal winter, I see a repeat of 2022.
What about international factors here? Dan, China continues to be slow, but they're definitely injecting their economy with a lot of stimulus and different capital measures, but also Europe. They're large consumers of natural gas too. How do you see the international factors playing into this market?
Well, one of the things, I'm glad you mentioned China, there's a big push in China. They're trying to transition a lot of their big trucks from running on diesel to running on natural gas. It's a big deal over there. They want to get half of their truck fleet, at least, onto natural gas. And so that's a big increase in natural gas demand globally. And, you know, we export a lot of our gas, and LNG tankers end up going to Asia. Japan has to import. They don't have any gas supply. They have to import all their gas. And, you know, the LNG market on the demand side looks very strong. And all these LNG facilities, you still have prices in Europe and in Asia over $10 per MCF. So here we are at 250, or we're at 255 today, which is good. Actually, good price. We were below two for a while. And over there, they're willing to pay $10 or $12. I think in Asia, it's like $12. It's higher in Asia than it is in Europe. And but, you know, if they have a cold winter the same way, they are going to have to keep having those LNG cargoes coming in to keep heating their homes.
Well, Dan, just to the point you just made, I think the nat gas market is a lot different than people are used to in the commodities because it's really based on regional pricing and local pricing, much more so than a global price. So when you look at oil or something like gold or other commodities, copper, it's really priced on the global scene. But with LNG, it's very regional. So with the impact of these LNG terminals coming on, and they're going to be having these premiums to ship it overseas to Europe and to Asia, could you speak about how you think that levels off domestic pricing as we start to find an equilibrium between overseas pricing and domestic pricing?
Yeah, the price you see in the news is the front month NYMEX contract for gas delivered to the Henry Hub in Louisiana. That's just one of the markets. I mean, I've seen winters where the gas price has gone double digits in New York. When I was at Hess, we sold gas into a New York winter one time at like $60 an MCF. Because when it gets cold and the utility companies cannot meet the demand, they will pay whatever price. They don't care because they're just going to run it through their rate base for the next year. So it doesn't matter. They absolutely have to meet the demand. And they'll just get out there and pay whatever it takes to get it to the New York City gate or whatever. Last year, even when we had a mild winter in the eastern half of the United States, we had a colder than normal in the west, and anybody could get their gas into the West Coast was getting $10 or $12 for a month or so out there when it got really cold. So, yeah, it's definitely regional pricing, and the profit margin is so big. You know, it's $9, $10 and MCF. For gas, you can go over there. Yeah, okay, let's say gas costs $3 in the U.S. and it costs you another $2 to, you know, freeze it and get it into a liquid form and put it in these ships and transport it over there. So there's $5 for the cost, and you're going to get a check for $10 an MCF on the other end of the, you know, on the delivery point. So there's a huge profit margin on this stuff. And internationally, natural gas is priced closer to its energy content. So gas in Europe and Asia is pretty much priced on from anywhere from 1/6 to 1/10 of the oil price. So if you got oil at $70 or something, and you would divide that by six. So that's how you get to an $11 or $12 price for the gas over there, because they price it on energy content, which it used to be priced that way in the US, but we're way out of that now. Because we're, I mean, we are truly blessed in North America to have incredible natural gas supplies. And that's another reason why I'm really bullish on natural gas, because it's the clean fossil fuel. And with this, AI electricity demand and everything, there's just so many areas where demand for natural gas is going up three or four times faster than what global demand for oil is going up.
Yeah, very good point. Okay, so you're bullish natural gas, especially at this stage. Let's talk about a couple companies you sent us. The first one being Antero Resources, traded AR on the NYSE. This company is a larger cap company, just under $9 billion. No dividends, but the company's been on a bit of a wild ride where when natural gas price dropped, 2023 was a tough year. Their operating cash flow, I think, was able to cover their capital expenditures, but again, kind of that break-even aspect. Q1 of this year, though, the company was cash flow positive despite a lower U.S. natural gas price. Obviously, you think this is a big growth avenue for the company, considering higher natural gas prices that you have forecasted.
Yeah, and, well, for one thing, Antero Resources is one of the top five natural gas and NGL producers in the country. It's number one or number two. And now I know I think since the Chesapeake Southwest merger went through, it's maybe even number three now as far as natural gas liquids producer. So it does produce a lot of liquids. And they were very profitable in 2022 when the gas price, spiked to like $9. And they did have a pretty active hedging program, but they decided not to hedge any of their gas for 2023. So they went to their unhedged, and then, you have a mild winter, the price goes through the floor, and they're stuck with that price. But they still generated like $900 million of operating cash flow, which covered most of, or all of it, all of their CapEx. They cut their drilling program way back and were able to cover it with their operating cash flow. But now they're looking like really good going into the fourth quarter and next year. Based on my forecast, they're going to go from like $900 million of operating cash flow to $2.1 billion of operating cash flow if the gas price averages $3.50. Another thing, they have contracted directly with the LNG exporters, and there are different gas markets even within Louisiana. And 75% of their gas goes into what's called the Tier 1 area down there, where there's like several, three or four of the largest LNG exporters are in this one area. And they have got, guaranteed supply contracts with those LNG exporters. So they're getting like a 15 cent premium on their gas above what a lot of their peer group is getting. So they're really good. And they're just going to generate a lot of good cash flow this year. I like it. It's really more of a growth story, and it's more if you get this paradigm shift on Wall Street where say, hey, I want to add more gas. But when people start looking at the big gas company, EQT is a big one, Range Resources, Antero is going to be high on their list. Another thing to remember, because of the pipeline takeaway capacity problems in the Permian Basin, even though a lot of the Permian companies do produce a lot of gas, they can't get it to market. And their gas price is going to stay well below the price in the East. Antero is an Appalachian company. They're up there in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio. They're producing the Marcellus Shale and the Utica Shale, and they've got a lot. I mean, they're producing like almost 3 BCF per day of natural gas, 200,000 barrels a day of natural gas liquids, which they get good prices on that too. And just even in the fourth quarter, they're going to have a big spike in their cash flow.
Well, Dan, when you put them in their Sweet 16 growth portfolio, is it more because of the growth that you see in the nat gas price and their ability to get a premium, being able to contract directly with those LNG terminals? Or is it because you also see growth in their portfolio? Could you maybe speak to how you value these growth companies and the analysis you do on those?
Yeah, they got a lot of running room. With their current inventory at their current rate of drilling, they got like 10 or 12 years worth of drilling inventory. And it's really good tier one stuff up there. And so the Range Resources, another one I should recommend too. And those are the big four, let's say. Now Chesapeake, because they've merged with Southwestern, you got Chesapeake, EQT, Range Resources, and Antero. And those are the four big ones that look really good. But Antero, because of this relationship with the LNG exporters and stuff, they're going to give a premium and they're going to really look good. And I think they're just going to draw a lot of attention. And this, our Sweet 16, it is a growth portfolio. It's now, right now, 15 of the companies do pay dividends, and Antero is not one of them. But I think they are going to start paying dividends. They've been criticized for not paying a dividend. So if they start paying a dividend, that'll open the door for some of these growth and income funds to invest in them. They'll have a lot more access to the market.
So since you like natural gas so much, it does sound like, as you just outlined with those companies, stick to these large ones, the large producers. They're going to have the best exposure to that higher price. Why not drill down into some of the mid tiers or some of the smaller cap ones then that could add maybe even extra torque to the upside with the strong natural gas price?
Yeah, some of them are, they're kind of off the radar screen. And one I like is Crescent Energy, the one that merged with SilverBow, and it's CRGY. And about 70% of their production on a BOE basis is natural gas. They've been focused on developing more oil this year, but it's kind of one of those ones that nobody's really focused, not that many analysts cover it. And it's going to be the second largest producer in the Eagle Ford. And another thing, the Eagle Ford does have adequate pipeline, and it's located in South Texas. So it has got pipeline going right to some of these big export facilities. In fact, one of the biggest ones that are going to be added is in Corpus Christi. Cheniere has two trains, they call them, up online, and they have a third that's going to be online by December. And so they're going to be looking for more gas supply. And they get pretty good prices for their gas already. And so that's one to take a look at. CRGY, it pays a little dividend, not a great dividend, only 4% or something, but it's still a decent dividend. And then I think the other ones, like some of these royalty funds that we have, the royalty companies, mineral, I call them minerals companies, royalty payers, they look pretty good. So we can talk about Kimbell Royalty Partners, which is KRP. It is one of the four royalty companies in our high yield income portfolio, and it is about 51% natural gas. Let's see, what's it? 51% natural gas, 17.5% NGLs, and 31.5 crude oil. It's got a large acreage position. Now, it's a much smaller company on a production basis than Antero, but it pays a really good dividend. On its current share price, it's paying more than a 10%, 10.5% dividend yield based on today's share price. And it is a partnership, but it's elected to be taxed as a C corp for federal income taxes. But you still get the flow through that their dividends are going to be tax deferred return of capital. So that adds another, the after tax return is 10.5%, where the other ones you're paying tax on those dividends. So that's another reason to look at it. But it really looks solid. We published a report on it the other day, and I personally own quite a bit of it. So.
Well, Dan, just following up on this, you mentioned it's one of four royalty companies that you have in your high yield income portfolio. So you get those good dividends. But I would also postulate that with royalty companies or minerals companies, as you say, it's the same thing we see in the metal space. These companies don't have to have big staffs. They're not out there doing a lot of the work. They have these partnerships and agreements where they're getting a cut off the top of all the production. So do you see them as maybe a safer bet to play the nat gas space as opposed to individual company risk?
Yeah, people that are not familiar with the royalty companies, they somehow think they're higher risk sometimes. I get these calls and people don't understand the business model. They have no drilling risk. They own the minerals, so they lease the acreage to the upstream companies. The upstream companies have all the drilling costs, all the operating expenses, and all these royalty companies do is collect royalties. And so, like Kimbell pays out 75% of their cash flow, operating cash flow is paid out every month. They pay variable dividends, but they've been pretty consistent, and it's pretty easy to see what they're going to be. So anyway, it's yeah, they're safer really, and I like them. Now the one that has the most exposure to natural gas is Blackstone Minerals. It's BSM, but it is an MLP. So if you don't want to own a partnership and wait for a K-1 or something. But it looks really good, and it's got a pristine balance sheet, a very conservative management team, and they've paid off almost all their debt. I don't think they have any interest-bearing debt now.
So will these royalty companies then, do they provide the same upside that you would see in even some of the major natural gas producers?
Well, what I like about Kimball Royalties, they got formed by some guys with some pretty deep pockets, and they've made like eight since they were formed in 2017. They've made eight significant acquisitions. And they've got a lot of upside from the standpoint they own have a huge acreage position too. And there's a lot of active rigs drilling on their land. They don't control the drilling schedules of the companies they lease to, but the way they structure the lease is so that you have to drill within the next 3 years or something, and they can watch the number of wells that get permitted and everything. So they got a pretty good visibility of what their production growth is going to be. And they do have growth. They do have real good growth. KRP especially has growth. And the other two that I like is STR. I think I mentioned on your show before, and also Viper, which is associated with Diamondback. Now, I don't like Viper because of gas, because they're all in the Permian Basin, so they don't get good gas prices for that. But they are heavily weighted to oil, and Diamondback just closed that merger with Endeavor, and they're going to drop down a bunch of minerals into Viper. So from a growth standpoint, Viper would be number one, but more on the oil side than the gas side. But KRP, it's got steady growth.
Okay, couple stocks there, actually more than just a couple that we went into. Dan, it's always interesting hearing your thoughts on the energy markets, and now very much a shift towards more natural gas focus. That very well could be the case, as natural gas has done better, and quite frankly, oil just continues to almost have its rallies capped out. If you want more information on the Energy Prospectus Group, click that link in the show notes and send me an email if you want to get put in touch with Dan and want to get any of his company reports. It's always a pleasure having you on the show, Dan. And everybody, thank you for tuning in to this weekend show. Please be sure to go back through our website, kereport.com, and podcast and YouTube channel. Just search the KE Report in your podcast player to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates from this last week. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.